Time for Sports Lit 101, and Bruce right in the house with us. Hello, Mr. Pratt.
Hello, Mr. Kimball, sir.
Good to see you as always.
It's good to be here. I'm excited because we switched gears a little bit from what I was going to do, because the new Athlon, the Journal of Sport Literature, came out, and it has so many great sports poems in it that thought we'd look at some of those. And when I say sports poems, just let me introduce it this way. Stephen King is not a great writer because he's a horror writer. He's a great writer because he tells great stories. He knows how to do that in the horror genre. The same thing is true for Ray Bradbury in science fiction, or Ursula Gwynn, or Tolkien in fantasy. It isn't because they are a master of a genre. It's because they're masters of storytelling. And any Stephen King book that I've read, and I haven't read as many, has always had a moral or a purpose to it that goes far beyond anything that might have shocked or horrified you, right? So that's the same thing with sports poetry. It has to be a good poem, no matter what its subject is. And these transcend them. And the poetry editor of Athlon is our friend Ron Smith, former poet laureate of Virginia, who will join us next month to talk about a reissue of one of his books. And I'm going to ask him to talk a little bit about how he chooses some of these poems. So I thought I'd start off with one by a fellow named Matthew Johnson called A Commemoration, Ebbets Field. The working class of the blue-collar borough used to step the creaky wood of the walkway stairs and shuffle politely through the narrow aisles to sit atop one another. The polo grounds and Yankee Stadium were too garnished and debutante to be comfortable for the working stiff laborer. The technicolor outfield of Ebbets Field, plastered with ads for boot polish and razors, looked juvenile by comparison to the Puritan bare outfield walls of the Dodgers' crosstown rivals. To enter and view the black, Italian, and Jewish ballplayers of the boys of summer, untouchables to Anglo-America, one was required to enter a rotunda of Renaissance marble. It was as if the average Joes of Brooklyn put all their effort for its guests and communities to make the most beautiful welcome mat.
I like that.
Yeah, it's a very, you know, very thoughtful poem, and it does what a good poem does. It starts out going somewhere, and you're not sure where it goes next. I love this one. A lot of people, when you're a little kid, the first bat you hit with, the wooden bat's not a baseball bat, but a softball bat, because you can handle them and the handle's a little thicker and stuff. This is by Ron McFarland. We've had some of his poems on before, called Just Enough. My first baseball bat was a softball bat, thick handle. The brand, if it had ever been recognizable, reduced to nothing, a blur. It doubled as ordnance aboard pirate ships, as field mortars on fortresses built for any war. With neighborhood kids and cousins, we could feel just enough humans, girls included, to play work up. Otherwise, the only way my brother Tom, we'd be reduced to Indian ball, where the hitter picks up the orb and swats it wherever, then drops the bat where he stands and the fielder tosses the ball. And if he gets lucky enough to hit the bat, he can hit for as long as it takes, which for my 2 years younger brother meant till he got bored, which was always too soon. We didn't call it anybody. We just called it hit the bat when I was a kid. But that was a game we used to play a lot. There's one here I will be substituting a word because this is a fabulous poem. It's by Dave Nielsen, and we had the great one about him walking the field after the game and around the track last time. It was really good. He calls My Dad Will Go Down. My dad will go down as one of the great hecklers of all time. He yelled at referees. Not at the big sporting events, mind you. Not when he was drunk 70 rows up. I mean Saturday morning. Super League, junior jazz, sixth grade ball, over at the middle school. Each week he introduced me to a string of insults I'd never heard before. He wasn't a poet, but he might have been. Rabbit ears, zebra, show some hair. The way he mixed bullcrap with blank for brains without ever sounding redundant. As someone who's been known to heckle an official from time to time, I like that one a lot. And then just two more. One of these is one I by a poet that we've had on the show in regard to his book East Pittsburgh, Joe Bethanty, who was the poet laureate of North Carolina. This is called October 13th, 1960. This is a day that does not resonate well with me, but it's a great poem. By grace alone among us is Bill Mazeroski, Polish Catholic, son of an Appalachian coal miner. In the 1960 World Series against the Yankees, he struck for the Pittsburgh Pirates the miraculous home run foretold in sacred writ. Yogi Berra, one day to become a bard, documented its departure, the 1950s traveling off into Schenley Park, the number 8 on Berra's back, kaleidoscoping across the pinstripes of his gray flannels. Modernism ended. As Maz completed his revolution, fanatics left the stands to await him at home plate. By the time he lifted his hard hat to signal it had indeed transpired, we'd all been resurrected. Everything had changed. The very evening John Kennedy debating Nixon said the fate of the world and the future of the human race is involved in preventing a nuclear war. Everyone in our Larimer Parish, Saints Peter and Paul, including infants, were on the right track with Jack Buttons. 6 days later, Martin Luther King was arrested at a lunch counter sitting at Rich's department store in Atlanta. Kennedy phoned Coretta King. I just love the way that ties all those historical events together and does it with such precision. This one I thought reminded me of a poem that we really liked last time. It's by a guy named Thomas Reynolds called Walking the Field After Last Night's Win. Tramp down grass has yet to uncoil. Wind has cleared its breath of all crowd noise except sighs caught in the fence. Speakers above the press box can only whisper and hiss when crumpled programs stutter into the end zone. The game distills to a stirring in air, salt of evaporated sweat on a grass blade, a beetle scaling a mound of bare earth, cleat marks steadily unmarking themselves, tension in the seats still unclenching. I walk one more revolution. Steps measured and appreciative to mourn the echo. And by the time I enter the car, the echo of an echo of an echo.
Wow.
We have time for one more?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, this is called Tossing Stones, also by Thomas Reynolds. And I really relate it to this. You know, coaches sometimes after a loss or even after a win can't go to sleep. And sometimes you get up and you just drive somewhere to look at the sunset or go to Dice Arts or, you know, hopefully you weren't noticed or. It's called Tossing Stones. Once a coach, always a coach, you tell all the fellows at the country cafe. You drill waitresses how to do their job, charge up the wife when she's down. Note moves of sun and stars. Chew out death at funerals, not afraid to get in his face for crossing the line. For years, you were the assistant coach to your replacement. Now you note with some satisfaction that he stoops and shuffles like you on the sideline. Stares at stars after a botched play, just like you, fumes internally until the clock expires. After a loss, until he drives the pickup past cornfields to Pond's Edge and skips rocks until 1 o'clock. What good does it serve? You mutter as you take another sip of lukewarm coffee. Boys, the wins are never quite as good as you think, the losses, well, one can get a lot of thinking done, tossing stones, barking at the moon, falling asleep in the truck cab, listening to the coyotes howl. Well, this is a wonderful edition of this, why don't I finish with this one? Just to say that it's AETHLON, and you can order it. It's really good. It's called Tethered, and as an old fellow with granddaughters, this one really grabbed me. The shortstop breaks to the hole, backs hands on the short hop, plants pegs, and gets the runner by a step. As the first baseman reaches far to his right and picks the throw from the dirt. Nice play at both ends, I whisper to myself as I stroll the ballpark concourse with a slow, arthritic gait. Nearly 50 years of seeing nice plays makes it no less nice. I feel a tug at the wrist. My grandson, a toddler at his first game, peering eagerly down a steep aisle, is about to romp headlong toward the field. Quickly but gently, I pull at the stretch cord that links my wrist to his and watch it coil reassuringly while, grinning, he comes scooting right back to me, slightly pigeon-toed, heels off the ground, hands looking loose and nimble, a middle infielder in the making. As he snags me around the knees and hugs, nice play at both ends, I whisper again.
Nice.
Yeah, nice. Very nice poem, but the Sport Literature Association you can find on the web, This is the spring 2018, summer 2018 version. Literary magazines are generally a year behind when you get them. There's some great fiction chosen by friends of the show, Scott Peterson, a number of articles of a more academic nature that are good that I've only skimmed. I haven't had a chance to read them, but find the Support Literature Association. You'll get one or two of these every year when you join.
Excellent. And next week, our friend Ed Rice will be with us.
Yeah, well, he will be talking about the reissue by Down East Books of his book, Baseball's First Indian, about Louis Sakalexis. Then we have Tim Spears with Spirals, and then Kevin Cowherd, and then Ron Smith. So we got authors and books coming up like crazy.
Love it. Thank you, Bruce.
Thank you, sir.